From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar.
Last week, Iran's Foreign Minister Mohammad Javad Zarif seized the stage at the Munich Security Conference for nearly 40 minutes, during which time he trashed the Trump administration, fired a pointed demand at Europe to do more to protect the nuclear deal, and generally painted a portion of Tehran's worldview that is rarely heard in U.S. and Western media. And we bring you as much of it as we can fit into our allotted time. This is Iran's Foreign Minister, Mohammad Javad Zarif.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, and a very good morning to all of you. It's great to be back here. This past Monday, millions of Iranians gathered for mass rallies to mark the 40th anniversary of the Islamic Revolution. An earthquake that collapsed a pillar of U.S. dominance in West Asia. We've never been forgiven by the United States for having exercised our right to self-determination. As a result, we have long been the target of an unhealthy fixation, let's say an obsession, which continues to this very day. The demonization of my country has been a convenient cross for 7 consecutive American presidents to bear. And even a more convenient smokescreen for America's regional clients to hide behind. It is long overdue for the United States to dismantle this malign institution, for it has today morphed into one of the greatest threats, even to America's own security and interests, let alone peace and security in the rest of the world and the region. In the past 2 years, the U.S. has taken its animus towards Iran to a new extreme, as epitomized by its unlawful and unilateral abrogation of its commitments under the painstakingly negotiated Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, which was unanimously endorsed by a Security Council resolution, a Security Council of which the United States is a permanent member. To gain, in fact, accomplices in its lawlessness, the U.S. is now laboring to force others to violate that very resolution, which explicitly calls for normalization of economic relations with Iran. At the recent meeting of, let me just call it, the unwilling and the openly coerced in Warsaw, the U.S. Vice President and the Secretary of State both blasted Europe on European soil for even attempting, albeit without much success, to abide by its obligations under the JCPOA and under Security Council Resolution 2231. Yesterday, right here in Munich, Mr. Pence repeated this farce when he arrogantly demanded that Europe must join the United States in undermining its own security and breaking its obligations. His hateful accusations against Iran, including his ignorant allegation of anti-Semitism against the heirs of a man described as Messiah in the Holy Torah for saving the Jews, is both ridiculous, but at the same time, very, very dangerous. This malign obsession with Iran is imposing costs on others, and especially in our region, which has for 40 years suffered from the consequences of insistence of the United States on making wrong choices. Driven by its pathological obsession with Iran, America has long encouraged recklessness and destructive adventurism on the parts of its clients. Let me remind you a bit of history. From arming Saddam Hussein, many people want to forget. We never do. From arming Saddam Hussein in his attack against Iran, including the use of chemical weapons, to supporting the propagation of extremism, just listen to what Crown Prince MBS has said, from aiding and abetting the ruining of Syria and bombing the innocent in Yemen, to whitewashing the incarceration of a prime minister and the dismemberment of a journalist. In parallel, the U.S. has systematically shielded Israel's constant aggression against the Palestinian people while insulating its severe violations of the sovereignty of Lebanon and Syria. And all in the name of containing Iran. Ladies and gentlemen, the U.S. claims, and unfortunately some blindly parrot, that it is Iran which is interfering in the region. But has it ever been asked whose region? Whose region? Just glimpse at a map for a second. The U.S. military has traveled 10,000 kilometers to dot all our borders with its bases. There is a joke that it is Iran's fault that put itself in the middle of all U.S. bases. Meanwhile, it has milked the region of its resources through massive arms sales. According to the most conservative estimate, the GCC's military spending alone will reach a record high of $100 billion this year. Seven times, listen to me, seven times that of Iran's. So who is really exporting insecurity to our region? What is it that threatens the region more? The unfathomable arsenal used to terrorize the people of Yemen? Or Iran's defensive missiles, which have only ever been used against ISIS in self-defense? Is it Iran that threatens the annihilation of others? Or is it Mr. Netanyahu, the wolf crier in chief, who openly threatens my country's obliteration while standing next to his nuclear weapon factory? No theatrics here, including the show put on by Mr. Pence yesterday, can obscure these realities. Indeed, more and more nations are becoming explicit about the fact that the United States is now the single biggest source of destabilization in our neighborhood. As we speak, Iraqi lawmakers are demanding the withdrawal of U.S. forces from their land. And after more than 18 years of failure in Afghanistan, the United States is now negotiating with the Taliban to withdraw American forces from Afghanistan. In contrast, our standing with the people of Iraq and Syria to counter terrorism has put ISIS on the verge of extinction, with both countries enjoying levels of peace and stability not seen in years. I arrived here from Sochi, where President Rouhani continued his dialogue with his Russian and Turkish counterparts on how further to promote peace in Syria. Prior to that, I visited Iraq and Lebanon, not for a few hours, but for 7 days of discussions with government officials, as well as with political, community, and business leaders, on how to work together to strengthen stability and advance economic opportunity in our region. But the reckless U.S. obsession with Iran is threatening even these hard-won victories. On another front, Iran's continued full implementation of the JCPOA, despite U.S. abrogation, has played a major role in decreasing tension and promoting regional stability. But, my friends, Iran cannot foot the entire bill for vital global security achievements, whether it is the nuclear accord or the combating of drugs and human trafficking from our region to Europe. Europe needs to invest as well. Many around the world, including particularly on this continent, speak eloquently about multilateralism, but they also need to walk the walk. For instance, INSTEX falls short of the commitments by the E3 to save the nuclear deal. Europe needs to be willing to get wet if it wants to swim against the dangerous tide of U.S. unilateralism. While we have shown our desire for engagement, we don't depend on others for our security, stability, prosperity, or progress. That is, we solely depend on our own people. That is why 40 years of so-called maximum pressure, namely demonization, war, terror, including the heinous foreign-sponsored terrorist bombing in my country on Wednesday, has failed to bring Iran to its knees, nor has it changed our people's decision-making calculus. And I can assure you, it will never change. Distinguished friends, Iran's foreign policy is designed to further the goal of creating a strong region that precludes the emergence of hegemonic aspirations by any power, inside or outside the region. A strong region simply means, doesn't mean people have to leave our region, it simply means that more confidence, more trade, and more interaction between and among the countries in the region than with the external powers. It requires homegrown political and territorial stability, reliance on the populace as the source of legitimacy, security, and prosperity, harmonization of our national identities with a regional citizenship, participation of all of us in the Persian Gulf region in ensuring peace, and the exercising of strategic self-restraint, what we have been doing for a very, very long time. Distinguished friends, in spite of all the ignorant hate speech by American officials, let me remind you that we Iranians are proud to be inheritors of a great civilization. The entirety of humanity, from our perspective, is today riding in the same boat. And we will either sail together or sink together. Our renowned poet Sa'di testified to this truth 900 years ago when he said, "All human beings are members of one frame, since all at first from the same essence came. When time afflicts one limb with pain, the other limbs cannot at rest remain." Thank you for your attention.
Let me begin by asking you, you described the United States' attitude towards Iran as a pathological obsession, and that it wanted to bring Iran to its knees. There are conflicting signals. What do you think the goal of President Trump's administration is? To bring you back to the negotiating table or to somehow resolve this with some military engagement?
Well, if they wanted to negotiate, we were at the negotiating table. And they were at the negotiating table. Up until, I think, April of last year, Mr. Brian Hook, who is now targeting Iran here and there, spoke to my deputy in the JCPOA Joint Commission in Vienna. So they decided to leave the negotiating table. We didn't leave the negotiating table. We are still at the negotiating table with the rest of P5 plus one, which is now P4 plus one or E3 plus two. So we're there. I think we hear conflicting signals. President Trump says one thing. Secretary Pompeo puts 12 conditions for negotiations with Iran, which means surrender. And I think he should be dreaming.
But he has held out the hand. He said, you know, gave a compliment to President Rouhani, saying, I imagine he's a very interesting man that he would
like. No, he didn't say interesting man. He's a lovely man.
And lovely.
But I don't know at what time of the day he said that, morning, afternoon.
He's offered a new set of.
No, he didn't. You see, we negotiated not a two-page document and a photo op. We negotiated a 150-page document. Every detail is spelled out. I can assure you, as somebody who negotiated it, and you can ask John Kerry or any of the European foreign ministers who negotiated the deal, or Federica Mogherini or Cathy Ashton, nothing can be done that is better than this deal. It's not all we want, and certainly not all the United States want, but it is the best that could be achieved between six world powers plus EU and another country which is proud to stand on its own feet.
Some of your colleagues have made it clear that once America pulls out of the deal, it's going to be very hard to keep the deal alive because of the mounting economic pressure at home, which, as you know, is also creating more political pressure at home. How much longer can the deal survive?
Well, I'm not a fortune teller, so I don't know.
You said yourself that your patience is limited.
It is limited because, as I said in my statement, we derive our security from our people. So it is very important for us to keep the people satisfied with what we're doing.
But they're not.
Now, we're not.
And it's not just because of sanctions. It's because of primarily corruption, because, economic policies.
Yeah, all of that. Yes. All of that. We're not saying that we're a perfect country. We're better than most of your allies, but we are still have a long way to go. But what is happening in our region and what is happening in Iran requires a great deal of foresight, a great deal of strategic patience. And we are exercising that. It doesn't mean that we will have to do it forever. Whenever our people are dissatisfied, now the polls are at about 51%. We are just at the brink. 51% of the people believe that we still should be in JCPOA, while 80% of the people believe that we didn't get anything from it.
And your hardline critics who've never trusted this deal, including, I would believe, your Supreme Leader, Ayatollah Khamenei, the pressure is mounting on those who negotiated the deal to say, right, let's go back, let's start enriching.
Yeah, there is pressure by a part of the population, but as I said, according to the latest poll by University of Maryland, still 51% say we should stay in the deal. That may change. Situations may change. We believe it is in our interest, but we believe it is at the same time in the interest of Europe to stay in the deal. And that is why I believe we appreciate that Europe has done a great deal politically. It has made all the right political statements. Some of them we don't agree with, but on JCPOA at least we can agree on JCPOA. But it hasn't been prepared to make an investment. It hasn't been prepared to pay a price.
Let me ask you a question, as Europe,
if you allow the United States to make these demands, because the U.S. is demanding Europe to violate international law. It's not demanding Europe to abide by international law, but it's demanding Europe to violate Security Council, and it's punishing Europe for implementing it. So this is an outrageous demand. If the United States were to come in the course of their fight with China and told Europe, stop dealing with China, what would you do? Well, whatever you want to do then, do now in order to prevent that eventuality, because a bully will get bullier if you succumb.
Well, let's look at the, we'll put aside the JCPOA because there's a fundamental disagreement between the United States and Europe on it. But there are issues on which they have shared concerns. Let's look at ballistic missiles. We heard from the French foreign minister on Friday saying we are in a difficult dialogue with Iran. And if we do not see more progress on France, as you know, has suggested a separate deal, agreement on ballistic missiles. He said, if we don't make progress, France will have to impose new sanctions.
Well,
Does Iran have to address those concerns if it wants to make wider progress?
Let me ask you a question.
I asked you one first.
No.
Yes.
I'll answer your question. Does Iran have to simply lie dead because some people don't want us to be able to defend ourselves?
The UN Security Council resolution behind the Iran nuclear deal called on Iran not to develop ballistic missiles.
No.
So we're talking about it.
My friend, I negotiated 2231, so I know every word of it. It called upon Iran. It didn't demand Iran.
It did not, call on Iran, yes.
Not to develop, so it's something different, not to develop ballistic missiles that are designed to be capable. Every word of it took months to negotiate. Designed to be capable to carry nuclear weapons. We don't design any of our missiles to be capable to carry nuclear weapons because we don't have nuclear weapons. So none of the Security Council nonsense. The Europeans know it, the Russians know it, even the Americans know it. The Americans have testified before Congress when the deal was on that it's not about missiles per se. It's about missiles designed to carry nuclear, to be capable of carrying nuclear
weapons.
Just
what they're saying now.
We negotiated forever. But let's wait a second. Problem is, there are $100 billion of weapons going to Iran. Nobody is selling us a single fighter jet. Nobody. How are we supposed to defend ourselves? When we were attacked by French Exocet missiles, by German chemical weapons, by Russian MiG fighters, by British tanks, by American AWACS surveillance, who came to our assistance? Why, when our people were being showered with missiles, with Iraqi missiles, nobody gave us a means of defense, either air defense or missiles to retaliate? No one. We had to beg. Now, I am not going, for the pleasure of my friend, Minister Le Drian, or anybody else, to make our people defenseless so that the next Saddam Hussein in our region could rise up and kill our people without the means of our defense. We still have people who cannot breathe in Iran because of the chemical weapons that were provided to Iraq from Europe. If we were to negotiate about armaments, Europe has a lot to respond to. Europe is not going to be in the Inquisition seat. Europe will be asked why it supported Saddam Hussein.
Okay,
why
we can't go back in
the bombing in
Let's
Yemen.
Not go back in so, history. We've got
no, no, no.
enough on the current.
So,
let's ask this. So the United States objected to your recent, has to be said, failed satellite launches, saying the technology used could be interchangeable with technology used in ballistic missiles. Then
the argument about missiles is misplaced.
Yes, but then
satellite launches.
The New York Times published a report saying that actually there's been a very long-standing and an accelerated program to sabotage your development of ballistic missiles, providing faulty parts, etc. Iran is looking into this. Is there, do you think, now?
We're investigating this, but I think more than Iran, the international community should be concerned, because last time the United States engaged in that operation, it resulted with Israel in the killing of 6 nuclear scientists. I think it is important for the international community to rise up and say that this is not jungle. We don't run the law of the jungle.
Okay.
That you interfere in the legitimate defense of another country. I asked you a question. Does Iran have the right to defend itself? And if we have the right to defend ourselves, do we do it with swords? Do we do it with whatever, guns? Or do we need sophisticated means of defense? The most sophisticated means of warfare are being sold to our region, and President Trump conveniently calls them beautiful military equipment. Now, we're not getting any of those beautiful military equipment, the beautiful military equipment the Yemenis are getting. Mm. They're being killed with it.
Okay.
I don't think they call it beautiful.
Okay. Missiles is one issue. We don't have a lot of time. I just want at least to touch on some of the issues that both Europe and the United States agree on. Last month, the Europeans...
They're simply repeating the American claims. Why they agree on? I mean, this is...
But they wouldn't do it for the sake of doing it. They obviously have
concerns. Any European should tell me, because, you know, this didn't come out of the blue. We had these discussions during the JCPOA, and we decided, because each one of us had something to say, we decided to set it aside.
Okay,
it's not that somebody has all the right and somebody is just doing mischief in our region.
Okay, let's set that one for the side. Last month, European Union, it will unfortunately be negotiating this for many months, if not years to come. European Union imposed new sanctions on Iran last month. It put two Iranians on its list, as well as an intelligence unit, after there were attacks in Denmark, in France, and the Netherlands. So the European leaders are saying, what is Iran doing it, trying to carry out assassinations on European soil? They also see this as part of a kind of behavior that they want to stop.
Well,
they've imposed sanctions, so it's not simply just allegations. And people have been arrested in France.
Sanctions based on allegations, not sanctions based on facts. Let me make a couple of comments, because this is very important, and I want to really address this. First of all, the arrest of the person who is charged with the Villepin bombing happened on the day of arrival of our president in Europe after many months of preparation. Do you think we're really crazy that we do this on the day? At least we do it the day before, the day after, 10 days after, wouldn't die. We do it on the day that our president comes here. I mean, give us some credit.
Some accusations
now,
that perhaps it was a rogue operation within Iranian agency?
It could be a false flag operation. It could have been an entrapment. It could have been a rogue operation. But it's certainly not the work of a government that you should call crazy if it did it. And you don't gain the influence that we have by being simply crazy. Now, let me address another issue. There are allegations. Now, the Netherlands made allegations. They kicked out two of my diplomats, career foreign ministry officials, and now their intelligence is saying that they had no evidence. No evidence. Now, we are the aggrieved party. Second point, what is clear is that there are people in Europe who have been on Europe's terrorism list up until 2012. What happened all of a sudden that they were withdrawn from the terrorism list? You see, I followed these issues for a long time. In 1984, let me take you back a bit in history. In 1984...
It's an unfortunate date to use, but let's...
Yeah. The United States removed... The United States removed Saddam Hussein from its terrorism list and put Iran on terrorism list. Again, in 1990, Saddam Hussein was put back on the terrorism list.
We cannot keep going back to Saddam Hussein.
In 1998, the United States put MEK on the terrorism list. In 2012, they took it off the terrorism list. This is a game. This game needs to stop. A terrorist is a terrorist is a terrorist. Terrorists don't change. Rudy Giuliani yesterday spoke for the MEK. John Bolton has spoken for the MEK. John Bolton is angry because he promised the MEK that he would celebrate in 2019 in Iran with them. They are still in Paris.
Do you think John Bolton represents what some say, that a lot of the statements of President Trump's administration verge on wanting regime change?
I think the United States administration is not doing anything but regime change. Only regime change. It wouldn't have withdrawn from JCPOA the way it withdrew from JCPOA had it not had the illusion that there would be regime change within a month. The United States, this administration is listening to wrong folks. These guys have had the illusion that Iran will evaporate for the past 40 years. And we are still here. Seven administrations have gone, and we are still here. And I think we will be here for a long time.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.